One of the central figures in the Battle of New Orleans is, of course, Andrew Jackson. And right now at the Historic New Orleans Collection, there's an exhibition entitled Andrew Jackson, Hero of New Orleans. And here to talk more about it is Jason Weiss. He's Associate Director of the Williams Research Center for the Historic New Orleans Collection. Jason, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Andrew Jackson, he's quite a figure in history. Let's talk about the Battle of New Orleans and how that impacted Jackson. First of all, can you give us a little setup right before? What was his role going into the Battle
Certainly.
Of New Orleans?
Andrew Jackson had been a relatively little-known frontier militia general from Tennessee. His successful prosecution of the Creek War earned him a promotion to major generalcy in the United States Army and command of the 7th Military District, which was basically the Mississippi Territory, Tennessee, and Louisiana, including the critical port of New Orleans, which was by far the most important western possession of the United States.
Now, when we talk about the Battle of New Orleans, it's not – we're not just talking about one day, generally speaking.
It was a campaign that took place over the course of a couple of weeks. It was a very large and important campaign just in the calculus of the British military establishment. It was part of a kind of a three-pronged strategy to capture valuable targets in the United States and force an early end to the War of 1812, which is something that the British government hadn't wanted to begin with. It was declared in part because the United States as a neutral nation just got caught up in Britain's attempts to isolate France, Napoleonic France.
And prior to this, obviously, the British had gone through Washington and burned Washington and this kind of thing. What were people in New Orleans thinking at this time?
Well, in that summer and autumn following the, following the capture and burning of public buildings in Washington, there was a lot of just doom and gloom in New Orleans. People were very upset. There were many rumors that they were next. They were going to be next to be attacked. So people were well aware that an attack was coming. No one really thought that it could be successfully resisted. The local politics, of course, there was a very diverse population here in New Orleans. You had the Francophone, French-speaking Creoles and foreign-born French vying with the English-speaking Americans like Governor Claiborne, and really not agreeing on much and not cooperating on the security. It's really not until the arrival of Andrew Jackson in early December that everyone kind of puts their differences aside temporarily and focuses on the common defense.
And so you say December
1814.
So there's battles. There's battles up in Lake Bourne. There's a confrontation up there as well. And this is in late December.
Yeah. Well, mid-December 1814, the Royal Navy clears away a small fleet of American gunboats and opens the way for British troops to be landed in Louisiana. And when news of the results of the Battle of Lake Bourne, which took place on December 14th, 1814, when news of that engagement reaches the city, there's a major panic. People are just, oh my God, the sky is falling. We don't know what's going to happen next. And that was one of the contributing factors to General Jackson declaring martial law in the city, basically suspending everyone's civil liberties just in an attempt to maintain control in a city that was full of foreigners that he didn't know if he could trust.
So this all kind of sets the stage for January 8th and the Battle of New Orleans. And can you step us through that a little bit and Andrew Jackson's roles?
Well, there were a number of engagements that took place beginning on December 23rd. And basically, the British Army is unable to dislodge Jackson and his improvised force of regular soldiers and militia volunteers. They have dug into a very strong position behind a drainage canal on the Chalmette Plantation. And the campaign culminates in a grand battle on the 8th of January, 1815, which is the last all-out attempt by the British force to overrun Jackson's defenses and proceed on and capture the city. And they're not able to do it. Jackson is well ensconced. He has strong artillery. The British are forced to attack him over open ground, and they're just getting mowed down by the hundreds. And it's this incredibly lopsided affair. At the end of the day, over 2,000 British casualties as opposed to just a handful of American casualties.
Now, one of the great ironies of history, which we all learned in school, is that the Battle of New Orleans was actually fought after the peace treaty was signed.
Right. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's the main misconception that people have about the Battle of New Orleans is that it was unnecessary. It was fought after the war had ended. That is absolutely not true. It is true that the Treaty of Ghent was signed on Christmas Eve of 1814. However, that's only the start of a process. Once a treaty is negotiated and signed, copies have to be returned to the governments of all of those, you know, whoever's negotiating it, has to be debated in the Parliament or the Congress. And if it's approved, it's ratified. And in the case of the War of 1812, the ratifications had to be formally exchanged before hostilities would end. And that didn't take place until February 16th, 1815 in Washington, so well over a month after the Battle of New Orleans had been fought. The British government wanted to end the war, but the reason they wanted to capture New Orleans and other valuable targets in the United States is they wanted to end the war in a position of bargaining strength. And if they had captured New Orleans, they would have had a very valuable bargaining chip to use in whatever way they wanted. They could have protected their Canadian interests. A lot of scholars believe that's what they would have done. There are some historians who believe that they would have returned Louisiana to Spain, because it was the British government's position that the Louisiana Purchase had been illegal. It had been Bonaparte's breaking of the Treaty of San Ildefonso that led to the purchase of Louisiana by the United States. And, you know, you could make that argument. But what they would or wouldn't have done, we can only speculate.
Okay, so Jackson, he wins. What does this do for him? Now, where does this propel him? How important is this?
It's difficult to overstate the magnitude of Jackson's celebrity after the Battle of New Orleans. He is a superstar. Everyone wants to know more about him. They want to know where he's from. They want to know what he looks like. And we're fortunate in our exhibition to have the two earliest extant portraits of Jackson, which, you know, would have been the first glimpse that people would get of him, you know, through copies of paintings that appeared as frontispieces in books or in souvenir prints and that. Jackson rode that wave of just incredible celebrity to the White House in 1828. But for many of the people in the United States, Jackson and his men served as exemplars of what Americans should be, you know, rough and self-sufficient and able to fend off, you know, the attacks of, you know, the colonial powers of Europe, for example. They were celebrated in song and in art, and we have all kinds of examples in the exhibition that kind of show the different permutations of Jackson in American popular consciousness.
Well, it's a fascinating exhibit. It's called Andrew Jackson, Hero of New Orleans. It's at the Historic New Orleans Collection on Royal Street, 533 Royal Street. And Jason Weiss is Associate Director of the Williams Research Center at the Historic New Orleans Collection. Jason, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Paul.